Chapter 8. Pox Waters. The sound of battle had faded. Now only its echoes remained. The moans of the wounded, the soft susurrus of a healing rain, the sizzle of the last embers of balefire as they were snuffed. The great cauldron had been shattered, and its contents reduced to stinking clouds by Gardas's arrival. Throughout the citadel, stormcasts worked diligently to stack and burn the corpses of their slain foes in clean fires set by the lightning strikes. Lord Celestant Gardas knew it was much the same in the other two citadels. The steel souls had dispersed upon arrival, moving to take control of the walkways and glistening paths of Sargassum that connected the trio of floating fortresses. They had been met there by enemies and by newly freed captives as well, hundreds of them. He looked around at the faces of those who crowded about him. They were silent and hollow-eyed, sullen with fear and resignation. They had suffered much in their short, brutal lives, and his heart twisted in his chest, convulsing in sympathy. But not pity. Pity was what one felt for a lesser thing, like a wounded animal or a dying foe. These folk were neither animals nor foes. They might as well have been his own people, his kith and kin, at a remove of many centuries and generations. It pained him to see them, to see any being brought to such ruin. But, Sigmar willing, it was but a temporary thing. Already, great cities were being constructed in the wild places of Gairan, and not all of them with the blessings of the Everqueen, if the rumours he'd heard about the Greywater Fastness were true. But others, such as the Living City, were constructed from the very bedrock of Gairan, by the magics of Alariel herself. The steel souls had bled on the iron oak bulwarks of that place, and Grimm had held the 12-thorn gate against the Rotbringer forces besieging it. The same forces they had pursued here, to the Verdant Bay, in the aftermath of the war. Morbus had told him of the trail of devastation they had followed south, of the burned forests and desecrated groves, of the gallows raised on every hill and peak, and the bodies swinging in the breeze, and of the slave caravans, many miles long. The Order of the Fly had much to answer for, and Gardas intended to see to it that they did so. The destruction of the Sargasso citadels was but the first step on that road. Gardas would not rest until he had restored all that Nurgle had taken from this realm, including hope. That was the heart of their campaign here, the reason for their presence. Other storm hosts brought vengeance or freedom. Some inspired the downtrodden to take up the fight anew. But the hallowed knights brought hope. For hope was the seed of faith, and once planted, it could not be easily destroyed. And the beginnings of hope were what he saw in the faces of those gathered about him. Beneath the pain and fear, the first flickers of belief in something better. And that was why he allowed them to gather about him, and followed them where they led. Though they refused to look at him or answer his questions, he had faith that they meant him no harm, and had bid his warriors to leave him to discover the reason for himself. The crowd that encompassed him was made up of men and women and children, all ages and descriptions. Many were thin with privation, bones visible beneath grimy skin. The sickly sweet smell of gangrene hung thick over the crowd, and there were too many gaps where legs and arms ought to be. Too many faces sagged with clusters of boils or leprous encrustation. All were sick, broken, but at least these could stand. The cages were full of those too weak to do so, as Morbus had shown him. Those too sick to rise or too crippled. The worst of it was, they had not been brutalized. Their state was due to negligence and proximity rather than harsh treatment. His stomach clenched as a nearby child plucked at the sores on her cheek. She led her mother by the hand. The woman was blind, the sockets of her eyes scabbed over. A hunched form scraped past him, hands braced on wooden blocks, the stumps of useless legs dragging in the dirt. Everywhere Gardas looked, there was decay and ruin, and he had the feeling there were worse things yet to be discovered. A few hundred enemy warriors remained at large, having retreated into the tunnels below or else escaped on slow-moving, barnacle-ridden barges for the far shore. Even now, his steel souls hunted them under the direction of his auxiliary commanders. The citadels were not yet fully conquered, but they soon would be. Even so, he felt uneasy, as if something was wrong, as if the battle were not yet won, but only just beginning. He'd felt this way once before in the Gaia Tract Fen, a Rotbringer tribe dead at his feet and the gates of dawn pulsing with corrupt life. He felt again the sudden sense of nausea as the realm gate had convulsed and gawped, vomiting forth a thing out of nightmare. Bolothrax. He closed his eyes, banishing the image from his mind. Bolothrax was gone, sent back to the realm of its master in tatters, thanks to the Everqueen. He heard a gasp and realized that his light had grown bright as his mind had wandered. It shone as fiercely as the glow of Grimm's warding lantern, washing aside all shadows. The mortals huddled closer, murmuring in awe. Grimy bandages steamed in the glow, and infected wounds began to bubble and leak. Without thinking, Gardas reached out to them. Where his hands touched, open wounds began to scab over, and buboes shrank. Men and women wept in mingled fear and joy as his light blazed ever more vibrantly. Gardas looked around in confusion, uncertain as to what was happening. How was this possible? All around him, the mortals sank to their knees.
No, he said.
Then more loudly,
no, up. I am not the one to whom you should kneel.
Gently, he pulled those closest to him to their feet.
In fact, it is I who should kneel before you.
And why is that?
Gardas turned. The old man was blind. His eye sockets were a ruin of faded scars, and his face was worse still. His nose had been partially eaten away by some disease, and his brown teeth showed through gaps in his lips and cheeks. A halo of stringy white hair framed the wreckage. He sat cross-legged in the lee of a makeshift tent made from a tattered cloak, stretched over a quartet of broken spears. What was left of the old man's mouth twisted in a faint smile.
I can smell the storm on you. You smell of spring rains and clean water. I remember those things, though not well.
Gardas allowed the crowd to carry him towards the old man.
You speak for these people, he said.
The old man chuckled. The laugh degenerated into a racking cough, and he bent forward, wheezing. Gardas reached for him, but the old man waved him back.
I speak only for myself, he coughed. That they choose to listen is more a sign of our desperation than any wisdom I might possess. I am Yare of Demenos.
Demenos. The name rang through Gardas's mind like a bell.
I am Gardas.
You are not a mortal man, Gardas. I can hear the echoes of your voice in what remains of my marrow, and feel the heat of your armor on my face.
No, Gardas said, I am not mortal.
Yare nodded weakly.
That is good. The days of mortal men are drawing to a close, I think. We are too fragile to survive what these lands have become. We pass into myth and leave the ruins of the world to gods and monsters.
Do not leave on my account, Gardas said.
The old man laughed again.
I am in no hurry. I merely state a belief. I was a philosopher, you know. One of the last, I suspect. Not much use for philosophers these days.
You are wrong.
Yare cocked his head.
Am I? That would be a welcome thing.
Come closer.
You said you should kneel before us, Gardas, and I asked why. You have not answered my question.
Gardas sank to one knee before the old man.
I want to ask your forgiveness and to make a promise.
Promise?
the old man said, searching blindly for a face he would never see. Gardas removed his helmet and set it aside. He caught the old man's groping hand and guided it to his face. Yare hissed in surprise. Gardas wondered what he had been expecting.
Yes, you are the faithful, and we shall not abandon you again. A fine sentiment, Yare said quietly. But is it the truth?
Gardas hesitated, uncertain how to answer such a question. Despite the kinship he felt with them, these people were no longer his, not truly. There was an ocean of time between them, and the realm Garadan of Damen had left was not this one, not any more. Things had changed, and the healer was now the warrior.
Demenos, a ruin, and philosophers made slaves.
He was spared having to articulate any of this by a sudden rumbling from below. He rose swiftly to his feet, and the mortals drew back, their adoration turning to fright.
What? Yare asked. What is it?
Something has happened.
The ground trembled. Gardas heard a great cracking sound, as of rock shearing from a cliff face. The ground split, and murky water spewed upwards. Mortals were knocked sprawling as liquid spilled across the ground, slopping against the walls. Scaffolding tore away from the inner walls of the citadel as the destructive vibration rose. It crashed down, filling the air with dust and jagged splinters. Gardas interposed himself, shielding Yare and several others from the worst of it. He turned, scanning the courtyard.
He spotted Morbus hurrying towards him, accompanied by Aetius and a retinue of liberators.
Aetius, get these people to safety, Gardas said. Morbus, what is this? What's going on?
The Lord Relictor staggered as another tremor shook the ground. Gardas steadied him.
Is this some new trick of the enemy? I do not think so. At least, not an intentional one.
Morbus braced himself with his staff as the citadel jutted again.
Lord Castellan Grimm has not yet returned. I fear the two are connected.
Loras!
Gardas pulled on his helmet.
We must find him, and swiftly.
Taunus swooped low as the citadel continued to shudder. Already, poxwaters had filled the lower courtyard and extinguished many of the funeral pyres. He wondered if the fortress were dying. Sometimes the bastions of Nurgle possessed a crude life of their own. If that were the case, the entire edifice might soon sink into the sea. The thought gave him no pleasure. There were too many mortals yet to be freed, too many sick, too many wounded. They would not be able to save them all. Already, hundreds were being shepherded across the remaining viaduct by liberators and judicators. But not quickly enough. Prosecutors swooped overhead, carrying those too weak to move on their own. While much of the chamber was engaged in the evacuation, a substantial portion of its strength, led by Lord Celestant Gardas, had descended into the depths, seeking the source of the pox waters that threatened to drown them all. Taunus banked sharply, his keen gaze searching the rubble below, seeking any signs of life. The task of searching for any survivors not yet gathered with the others had fallen to he, Kadok, and Enyo. While many of the mortals had turned on the Rotbringers as soon as they were given the opportunity, others had fled, seeking a safe place to wait out the fighting. Further, the surviving Rotbringers were mustering. Those who hadn't fled in their ironwood barges across the bay would be readying themselves to counterattack. In their madness, they would see the death of this place not as a threat, but as an opportunity. His wings dipped, and he swooped beneath a tilting scaffold. Loose ropes and chains slapped against his armor like vines as he drew close to the ground. Arsphenis screeched from somewhere above.
Yes, he said, I saw it as well.
Movement. Below a mound of fallen timbers. A steady stream of murky water curled through it, threatening to drown anyone who might be trapped beneath it. He dropped to the ground with a splash, slung his bow across his chest, and caught hold of a heavy timber. While not so strong as he once had been, he was still far more powerful than a mortal. The timber shifted with a creak, and he got his shoulder under it, forcing it up.
Whoever you are, if you can hear me, try to crawl out!
Something moved beneath the rubble. A noxious odor enveloped him.
My thanks, friend. Without your aid, I might have moldered in the dark or long.
The voice was a deep rasp, like a dull knife across burnt flesh. Taunus hurled the timber aside as something foul and dripping rose out of the dark to clutch at him with thick, wet fingers. He fell backwards, his attacker on top of him. A strong grip fastened onto the sides of his helmet and slung him to the ground, hard enough to smash the air from his lungs.
My apologies, friend. I dislike attacking one who has done me a good turn, but we are enemies, after all. Now, lie there, and I shall crush your skull quickly, by way of thanks.
The Chaos Knight caught up another timber, this one not quite as large as himself, and lifted it like a club. Taunus rolled aside as the timber crashed down. One of his wings extended, and its shimmering length soared across his opponent's arm, raising a burst of sparks. The Chaos Knight staggered back, clutching at his arm. The timber dropped to the ground, forgotten.
I almost felt that. Perhaps I spoke too soon.
He inclined his head. Ragged strands of silk hung from the crown of his enclosed great helm, woven among a circlet of stubby horns. The tusks of an auroch decorated the front of the helm and his oversized gorget. His armor was dark and plain, save for the clumps of blisters that marked its plates. He wore a threadbare tabard marked by the sign of the fly and a belt of broken skulls around his waist. He spread his arms and said,
I have no weapon, as you can see. Will you permit me to recover my sword?
Taunus unslung his bow and reached for an arrow.
No. Fie, sir, fie. Will you shoot me down like a cur? It is being more than you are deserving, Pox Knight.
The Chaos Knight cocked his head.
Those mangled words seem overly familiar. Only one other have I ever heard speak in such a barbaric manner, and he is dead, perished in honorable combat. Not honorable,
Taunus said. Did this creature know him? Or who he had been. He could not recall, though he had fought alongside the Knights of the Order more than once. Compelled by some dark curiosity, he said,
Be speaking your name. I am Gatrog, Duke of Festerfane.
Is Goral being dead then?
Taunus asked, despite himself. Torglug had met Goral, though only once. Torglug had found Goral infuriating, he recalled.
Aye, and these many months. I suppose the duchy shall fall to our cousin now.
Gatrog took a step forwards.
Whatever happens, Festerfane shall always have a duke. So we were promised, and upon that promise we made our oaths. False promises, false oaths,
Taunus said, stepping back. He pulled on the glimmering drawstring, arrow knocked and ready. But he did not fire. Something stayed his hand.
You are being a living falsehood. You speak as if you know me,
Gatrog said. He took another step forwards, fingers flexing.
I'd heard that Torglug died in battle with the Storm Warriors.
Taunus shook his head. He felt as if he were in a thick fog, as if his lungs were constricting in his chest.
Torglug is being dead,
he said, his voice hollow. Why could he not loose his arrow? He had killed numberless Rotbringers since his apotheosis. Why did he hesitate with this one?
Is he? Gatrog asked. No, I can see the shadow of his blighted hand on you, whatever you call yourself. Hidden in starlight and silver, but it's there nonetheless. Nurgle seeds are tough things, and life always finds a way.
He reached out.
Is it you, Torglug?
Tornus lurched back and loosed his arrow. Gatrog grunted, but lunged forwards regardless, hands spread. He drove Tornus back, clutching at his throat.
It is you, isn't it? You've been enchanted, ripped from grandfather's bower by some Azerite curse.
One big fist slammed down on Tornus's shoulder plate, driving him to his knees. A second blow sent him sprawling in the water. Dazed, he lashed out with his bow. Gatrog reeled back, cursing. Osphinus shrieked and darted about the Chaos Knight. Gatrog's curses grew in volume as he swatted at the Star Eagle, until they were cut short by an arrow hammering into his chest. Three more arrows sprouted from his chestplate and pauldrons, staggering him. Tornus looked up. Cadoc crashed to the ground with a splash, starblade flashing as he removed one of Gatrog's hands at the wrist. He kicked the stunned Chaos Knight in the chest, knocking him back into the pile of broken timbers. Gatrog roared in protest and shoved himself to his feet. Cadoc laughed.
Some fight in this one, eh, sister?
Finish him, Cadoc, Ennio said, as she dropped to the ground beside Tornus. Are you injured, Tornus? Tornus shook his head.
It is only being my pride.
He felt like a fool, allowing a creature like Gatrog to get so close, and more so for requiring aid. Ennio nodded, as if reading his thoughts.
Better your pride than your body, she said, extending her hand.
He caught it and allowed her to pull him to his feet.
Surprisingly durable, some of these pox knights.
Knight or slave, they all burn the same, Cadoc said, flipping open his beacon. Look, abomination, look upon the light of Azir one time before you perish. A gift to you from the last prince of Ekran.
The azure radiance spilled forth, and Gatrog screamed. He stumbled forward against the light. His armor blackened and warped. Smoke rose from between its plates, and his tabard smoldered. Nonetheless, he groped blindly for Cadoc. One step, then two, three. Cadoc cursed and lifted his beacon higher.
Fall, filth! He snarled. Yield to the light! A true knight never yields, Gatrog said,
his voice little more than a hoarse rattle. His remaining hand fumbled towards the beacon, as if to snatch it from the knight Azeroth's grip. Instead, he sank to one knee with a groan. Cadoc, incensed, kicked him onto his back and set a foot on his chest, pinning him to the ground. He raised his starblade.
No!
Tornus said. Cadoc glanced at him.
What? Be staying your sword!
Tornus extended his bow, forcing Cadoc to step back.
Tornus, he is an enemy, a slave of the Dark Gods, Ennio said.
Even as I was being once,
Tornus looked at them.
And now I am standing before you, being clad in silver and bearing a realm hunter's bow.
He gestured to Gatrog.
Who is it to be saying that he could not be doing the same? Did that last blow to the head addle your wits? Cadoc demanded. He is an enemy. His sword must be purged in the holy fires of Azir.
He took a step towards the fallen Rotbringer. Tornus interposed himself. Cadoc extended his blade.
Do not think that because you wear silver, you are safe from my judgment.
Enough, the pair of you.
Ennio thrust her bow between them. She tapped an arrow against Cadoc's chestplate.
You speak of judgment as if you were Sigmar himself rather than his servant.
She looked at Tornus.
And you have chosen an inopportune moment to come to these conclusions, worthy though they may be.
As if to emphasize her point, the citadel gave another shudder. Chunks of rotting sargassum tumbled down from above, raining across the courtyard. Tornus lowered his head.
I am bowing to your wisdom, Ennio.
He reached down and snatched up a length of rusty chain from the rising waters.
We shall be binding him and taking him before Lord Celestant Gardas. Let him be deciding what we are to be doing, yes?
He looked at Cadoc, waiting to see if the knight Azeroth protested. Cadoc snorted and hung his beacon from his belt.
I await his judgment with interest,
he pointed at Tornus.
Know this, though. Do not seek to come between the Prince of Ekran and his prey again, redeemed one, else we shall see which of us Sigmar truly favors.
He laughed. The sound was decidedly lacking in mirth. Tornus turned to Enyo.
I am to be thanking you, Huntress.
Enyo nodded.
Well, you should. Now, let us chain this blubbersome creature before he recovers his strength. Having gone to the trouble to spare him, I would rather not be forced to kill him now.
Swiftly, they bound Gatrog in the chains, melting the links together with the heat of their arrows. Injured as the Rotbringer was, he gave them little trouble.
What sorcery is this that can transform a great warrior so?
Gatrog croaked as they stepped back, task complete. His body still smoldered from Cadoc's beacon, but his wrist stump had begun to scab over. He would heal, Tornus knew, but not soon.
What fell curse has reduced you to this base treachery, Torglug?
No curse, Tornus said. Hope. There was being one last spark of hope in me, one last ember of faith.
He looked down at his foe.
There is being a spark of hope in you as well, Gatrog.
Even as he said the words, he knew they were true. He believed that hope, that faith, was what had allowed him, had allowed Torglug, to endure the celestial beacons of the Stormcast Eternals. Where his followers had been reduced to ash, Torglug had stumbled on, as Gatrog had. Somewhere deep inside the Poxknight was a spark of the man he might have been, before Nurgle had corrupted him. Gatrog slumped.
Hope is the weed in Grandfather's garden.
Yes, Tornus said. That is being the truth of the thing.
Morbus Stormwarden felt old. Fingers locked about his reliquary staff. He bent mind and will against the rushing poxwaters that sought to flood the depths of the Sargasso Citadel. A force of nature, even a corrupted one, was not an enemy to be attacked. Instead, it had to be redirected, its fury purged. Behind him, stormcasts advanced, protected from the rising deluge by his magics. Ahead of him, the storm raged, and he let the leash slip, matching wind and lightning against water. It was no easy thing to carry the storm, and his campaign had all but worn him to a nub. Cleansing the skies, the waters, the land itself was no simple task. Added to his burden was the constant threat of Nurgle's shadow. Here, in Gairan, the plague god held more sway than he ought, and every stormcast who fell in battle with the Rotbringers risked having his or her soul devoured by the demons capering unseen just behind the veil of reality. It took a great deal of concentration to guide the souls of the fallen back to Azir, and he'd spent many restless nights in communion with the dead. Morbus had never spoken of these difficulties to anyone. They were his burden, as bearer of the bones of heroes, and he endured them gladly. Even as he had centuries past, as Amor of Baran Ulut. He could not recall much about his mortal life, but he remembered his title and the smell of incense. The weight of his ceremonial armor and the stiff, scratchy fabric of his robes of office. The feel of the scythe in his hands as he harvested the souls of the soon-to-be dead. He had been old then as well. And though his body was young now, his mind and soul still bowed beneath an accumulation of years. Age brought wisdom, and only the wise could endure the 12 rites. However, he didn't feel particularly wise at this moment. Tired, angry, but not wise. Something had gone wrong, or perhaps right. It was hard to tell. The spirits of the air and water were in an uproar, screaming over a black wound in the belly of the sea, a wound that spat bilious water and shook the foundations of the citadel. He could feel the rawness of it at the edge of his perceptions, a phantom pain impinging on his ability to focus. Then, that had been the way of it since he'd first set foot in the Jade Kingdoms. An infernal miasma clung to the ghost winds here, choking the skeins of fate and death with life unbound. Life without purpose or place in the heavenly mechanism, life that could only grow, stagnate, and rot eternally on the vine. All things had their season, but now those seasons were in disarray. Even now, despite the victories they'd won, Gairan was still in upheaval. The spirits of the land screamed, and it was all Morbus could do to ignore them and forge on, just as he'd ignored the obvious flaw in the Lord Castellan's plan. The realm gates were a Lord Castellan's responsibility, true enough, but purging them of corruption was a Lord Relictor's. He'd allowed Grimm to divert him, and now they would pay the price for his failure. He tightened his grip on his staff, drawing strength from the whispers of the dead. Spirits clung to him like a second cloak. Fallen heroes, spared reforging by some whim of Sigmar's. They added their potency to his. But that potency came with a price. Beneath the comforting whispers was the echo of another voice, a darker one by far, and as vast and deep as the sea itself. Morbus knew that voice intimately, as all Lord Relictors did. It rode the night winds and spoke in the language of the charnel fields. It gnawed their very being like a jackal with a bone and demanded obedience. Of the 12 rites, 4 in their entirety were devoted to resisting that demand and enduring the wrath of the one who'd made it. Failure in either case was unthinkable. There were worse fates than death. Sigmarite hard mantras slid into place, drifting in tight whispers from parched lips. The dark voice grew faint and was soon drowned out entirely by the crash of the storm. Morbus's head rang with the crash of blades and the music of the spheres as his limbs began to tremble from the fury of the forces at his command. He knew that he had to unleash it or risk being torn apart by his own magics. But to do so too soon would only add to the destruction the Poxwaters had already caused. Gardas wanted the citadel to remain intact until it could be fully evacuated. That sense of mercy was both the Steel Soul's greatest weakness and his greatest strength. Other Lord Celestans burned with a desire for vengeance or justice. Gardas shone with compassion. For him, war was but the difficult first step. It was what came after that was the most important task. If Gardas survived the battles to come, he might rebuild the mortal realm single-handedly. Morbus hoped he would be there to witness it. Behind him, he could hear the firm rumble of Gardas's voice and Kurunta's roaring bellow, but ignored both. They knew better than to speak to him at such a moment. A small, brief smile cracked his composure. Well, perhaps not Kurunta. The passageway bucked around him as he channeled the storm winds through its narrow coil. The waters surged forward and back, their strength blunted and tamed by his winds. Lightning surged, spreading through the noxious liquid, reducing much of its volume to steam. Not all of it, but enough to lessen the risk of flooding. He'd drawn more and more of the wind to him as they'd descended, using it to contain the waters, or else force them back. Behind him, liberators smashed crude drainage points into the walls and floor, bleeding off the remaining liquid a bit at a time. They had employed the same tactics to good effect in the storming of Quagmire Keep, much to the detriment of its semi-amphibious masters. If it worked as well here as there, the citadel might not sink into the verdant bay. At least, not yet. Morbus stumbled as another convulsion shook the passageway. Hardened sargassum ground against itself. Ochre dust sifted down in thick clouds. Behind him, Gardas barked an order, and shields rose with a rattle, forming an improvised roof over the heads of the stormcasts.
"Enough," Morbus murmured.
He raised a hand, and the others halted. He kept moving until he was some distance ahead of them. He raised his staff, channeling the power of the storm into its sigmarite core. The reliquary at the top of the staff began to clatter. Lightning crawled across the skull, licking out to scorch the walls to either side. The air in the passageway thickened, and his breath congealed in his lungs. He closed his eyes and slammed the staff down. The moment the ferrule struck the floor, the water evaporated. Steam swelled up, filling the corridor. It billowed away from him, spilling outwards in all directions. Where the steam passed, the water boiled away to nothing. The passageway shook as the echoes of his unspoken prayer reverberated through it. A moment later, he felt the first ebbing of the pox waters, though not solely through any effort of his. Some power worked at them from their source, choking it off even as he weakened them. He suspected he knew the source of it, however. He took a step and staggered. Without the fury of the storm keeping him upright, he felt barely able to stand. Gardas caught his arm.
Lord Relictor? I'm fine, Gardas. I endure, as ever.
Like the stones of the mountains?
Like the faithful, Morbus corrected.
He stepped away from the Lord Celestant. Gardas was glowing again. The light shone out between the plates of his armor, casting its soft glow over everything. It felt similar to the light of Grimm's warding lantern, invigorating and comforting all at once, as if Gardas had become a living beacon. Did blood still course through his veins, or was it all just starlight now? Morbus had heard the stories. Every Lord Relictor had. The souls of their fellow Stormcasts were their responsibility, and when the souls came back changed, so too did their responsibilities change. To watch, to judge. Sigmar was a wise god and left little to chance. If something happened, if a reforged soul displayed a flaw, it needed to be dealt with, and swiftly. Before that flaw spread, but was this light of Gardas's a flaw or a blessing? As if noticing Morbus's unease, Gardas tensed. His light flickered, dimmed, faded.
I forget sometimes, he said softly.
Unobservant, as I said, Morbus chided.
He turned and gestured.
That way.
He could feel the pulse of celestial energies somewhere close by. It spoke to him in a way few things did, in the language of the stars themselves. That the stars spoke to one another had not come as a surprise to him when he'd learned of it. All things spoke, if one but had the wit to listen. And sometimes what they said was important. This particular strand of energy spoke to him of desperation, of loss and determination. It flickered, growing weaker by the moment. Tired as he was, he quickened his pace. The passageway echoed with the crash of sigmarite as the others followed his example. When they found the entrance to the chamber, Gardas laughed.
Loras has definitely been this way, he said.
Morbus eyed the devastation, noting the black scarring and scattered chunks of hardened sargassum. Grimm had his faults, but vacillation wasn't among them. Upon finding a wall, he'd made a door.
Through here, he said.
The Stormcasts warily picked their way through the rubble. The chamber beyond was waterlogged. The floor was lower than the passage, its expanse interrupted by fallen support pillars. Muddy filth rose in miniature mountain ranges before dwindling into valleys and dogleg canyons. There were bodies entombed in the mud, their pale faces peering out from beneath folds of rotting sargassum. Morbus ignored all of this. His eyes were drawn to the black, bubbling lake at the chamber's heart and the half-formed things that floundered in its shallows. Cyclopean eyes rolled in sagging sockets, glaring blearily at the Stormcasts. Faces caught in a constant cycle of death and rebirth twisted into mocking smiles as shapeless mouths droned out a dull razor of sound. The closest of the demons struggled up out of the muck, leaving bits of itself behind. It made as if to speak. Kurunta, Garda said, his voice flat. Kurunta moved swiftly, his broadsword looping out in a wide arc. The demon's head plopped into the water, dissolving even as it did so. Its body followed suit, collapsing in on itself, until nothing remained but a thick scum on the surface of the water. More demons crawled towards them, hauling themselves half out of the muck, their bodies crumbling with every second. Morbus stepped back with a grunt of disgust.
They cannot sustain themselves here. They are already being pulled back to their master's realm. Then let us hurry them along. Solus, pass a fitting judgment.
Gardas's hand flashed down. A moment later, the wasp hum of Skybolt bows echoed through the chamber. Demons burst like rotting fruit. Those that survived the volley were dealt with by blade and hammer. Long moments passed as the stormcasts fought in grim silence. Only when the last had subsided with a disgruntled sigh was Morbus free to seek the reason for their abortive manifestation.
Where are they, Morbus? I see no sign of our brothers and sisters.
Gardas gestured.
Kurunta, Aetius, I want this chamber searched. If they're here, I want them found.
Morbus was only half listening to the Lord Celestant. He stepped to the edge of the dark water and sank down to one knee. Heedless of the bubbling demonic detritus nearby, he let his hand sink into the mire. It resonated with the echo of foul magics, and his skin crawled. But there was something else, a mote of light deep in the dark. He concentrated on it, probing it. His submerged fingers bent and curled into a fist. The tainted water began to bubble. Cries of alarm sounded from behind him, but Morbus ignored them. It was taking all of his focus to reclaim that which the dark had sought to claim. Slowly, he drew it towards him. As it rose, its light grew bright, stretching through the water until it seemed as if a star was shining beneath the surface. Morbus stood, drawing his hand up, water streaming between his fingers. As he did so, the light broke the surface in a cloud of steam. He heard Kurunta curse and couldn't fault the Night Heralder his reaction. The light bled from the shattered casing of a Lord Castellan's warding lantern.
Morbus, what does this mean? Gardas asked.
Morbus bowed his head.
It means we are too late.
He looked at Gardas.
Lord Castellan Grimm is gone.